You're listening to the Clutter Fairy Weekly, a weekly webcast and podcast brought to you by the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas. If you'd like to participate in one of our live webcasts, please visit cfhou.com/weekly. You'll find a calendar of upcoming webcasts, as well as instructions for joining the Zoom meeting via the app or by phone. We'd love to see you. That URL again is cfhou.com/weekly. Now here's the weekly episode. Enjoy.
Hi, Clutter Fairy fans. This is the Clutter Fairy Weekly for November 9th, 2021. I'm your co-host, Ed Gumnick, and I'm speaking with Gail Goddard, brilliant certified professional organizer and owner of the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas.
Hi, everybody. The Clutter Fairy Weekly is a webcast and podcast where we dig deep into the clutter that stands between people and the lives they want to be living. We aim to make sense of where so much stuff comes from in the first place, and we offer strategies to slow down the accumulation, reduce the collection, and comfortably manage the stuff we choose to keep. And we're going to talk about that about clothes today. We rely heavily on the questions and topic suggestions we get from you, our viewers and listeners.
If you're joining us in the Zoom meeting for the first time, you can share your comments and questions via the chat, and I'll try to make sure Gail addresses them before we move on to another topic. You can also use the raise hand feature to let me know that you'd like to ask a question or make a comment yourself via audio or video. We're also streaming the webcast live on Facebook, so you can share your questions and suggestions there, and I'll relay them to Gail. Okay, we're going to start, as we usually do, by recapping last week's assignment. The weekly title last week was called Do Make a Habit of It. The assignment was to establish or add on to a set of daily decluttering routines. We'd love to hear from our participants in Zoom and on Facebook who worked this week on cultivating a new decluttering habit. Please let us know in the comments. From our online audience, we have a couple of things. YouTube viewer KJ commented, "This week, I'm going to stay on top of my mail by binning the leaflets and other junk mail daily." And Serafina, also on YouTube, had this to say, "My daily decluttering routines start with simple things like making the bed, vacuuming the floor, taking out the trash. That gets me in an upbeat attitude that motivates me to find something else to get rid of that had embedded itself as more permanent clutter. Thank y'all for all the encouragement in my process. I'm making slow progress, but progress is progress."
Progress is progress, and something is better than nothing. And in the clutter-free world, everything counts. That is our motto, and it has been that way since the beginning. Any step is a positive forward motion. And so we absolutely agree with you. Slow progress is still progress. And so good for you for making the effort, and KJ for getting on top of the mail by getting rid of the junk mail every day. You will be surprised how quickly you can do that. And you're just training yourself that handling the mail every day will be easier than you think. So can't wait to hear how it goes. And I know you will come back and be able to say, "Woohoo, now I'm the master of the mail." So woo, we're cheering for both of y'all. Thank you so much.
Catherine reports that she is reading Tiny Habits by BJ Fogg.
Ooh.
Which is one of the sources we've used when we've talked before about habit formation. Dr. Fogg makes a big point of the idea of connecting new habits you want to cultivate to existing habits.
Yeah, he was the guy that talks about the link between the two.
Yeah.
To create an underpinning that supports continuing to do something new.
And Connie says, "Whenever I wish to listen to a certain podcast, The Moth," that's a good one, "I must do a shelf or drawer."
Ooh, that's a good one. If you're going to listen anyway, you have to sit there and do something while you're doing it. That's good. I like it.
I don't know if Joyce said, I don't know if this is in the realm of a habit, but just a progress report. Joyce said, "I started reading my late brother's letters from college that my mom kept. Better than I was expecting, healing rather than painful so far."
That's great. That's really great. And sometimes people, I'm going to assume that the letters from college are because he's not around anymore, and this is something that you inherited or were gifted, and facing them has felt like, oh, now I'm going to be focusing on the thing that was the person that was sad. And having that different point of view, you're reading the things and you're being reminded of their life and of their voice and of the way that they talked and thought. And there's something to be gained from focusing on who they were instead of their absence. And it's great that you were able to face them and work and read through them so far. That's awesome. And it also means that you understand more clearly the value of the letters. It's not just a concept that these are valuable letters, but if you're actually reading them, then they have made the transition from conceptual keepsake to actual keepsake that makes sense to you because you've read them and you value what you're reading. That's awesome. And brave. I'm proud of you for facing the chore.
Eclair asked, what is the moth? And we should talk about that. It's a storytelling event series. They happen in a lot of different cities, I think.
Yes, they do.
It's a live event where you can go and sign up to be, you know, to have your chance to get up and tell a story. Have you ever been to one?
No, but I listen to it every week on NPR. They play the resulting show and they do all these live events everywhere. And then people get selected to, they sort of get coached through telling their story and beefing it up. And then they, you know, they tell a story that's 3 or 5 or 10 minutes long. And it's true stories about their life that are interesting or fascinating or poignant or whatever. And so every week we get an hour on the radio that's three, basically like 20 minute or 4 15 minute storytellings. Yeah. And it's wonderful. And everybody's, you know, it's a million people from a million walks of life, all telling different kinds of stories about events that have taken place in their life. And it's fascinating storytelling.
And you can find it at themoth.org.
Right. And you're listening to a 15 minute story. And so you can absolutely be pulling out a drawer and decluttering while you're listening to somebody tell their tale, because it's radio, it's not a video. And so you're not distracted by the visual and you can just be listening to a lovely tale that has a time limit to it. So that you get 15 minutes and then you're done. And then a new person comes on, you can go do another task for 15 or 20 minutes and then you're done. And so it's sort of a good manageable internal clock monitor.
There you go. Lee said in response to the tittle, trying to take out trash before getting ready for bed. And then she also said, and this is going to take us to our next topic, starting laundry first thing in the morning helps keep power bill on lower cost level.
There you go.
That's good. We wanted to say, before we get to the main event, we need to make a correction about something we talked about last week. We received several comments in response to our suggestion to start a load of laundry before leaving the house in the morning. A couple of viewers reported incidents in which even fairly new washing machines and dryers caused fires or water leaks. So Gail, would you like to modify our advice on this point?
Yes, we thought we should modify our advice. I've never had that personally happen, but people were right. It does happen. And you are taking a risk if you start something and leave the house. And if that makes you nervous, then we thought we'd modify our advice about how to do that. So rather than start either machine, a washer or a dryer running when you leave the house, you can still gather and sort a load to have ready to run as soon as you get home. Like you could load the laundry or load the dryer, not turn it on until later. Or you could throw in a load as soon as you get up. You don't have to be super awake to load the laundry, right? It's basically mindless and a good 10 minute chore. So if you start it first thing when you get up, then the cycle will be done before you leave the house. So you can feel safe about it when you leave for the day. And if it sits in the washer for the day, then you come home at night and put it in the dryer or vice versa. And so you can make those things happen and be complete before you leave, which would reduce the risk of fire or leak. And that's our modification. Please don't set your house on fire. That would be mad.
We would not.
We don't want to be the cause of you setting your house on fire or having a flood. So,
okay, I'm going to go back for one more comment because Kara wrote a very complete tittle report. She said this was a very good tittle for me.
Okay.
New habits. Put away projects and piles of books when done or at the end of the day. What a difference that has made. Take care of dishes right away or before the end of the day for sure. Lovely to wake up to a clean kitchen. I feel like a princess.
Isn't it?
And new idea for me from Gail. Have a grocery list going on the fridge and the pen is in a drawer next to it. This is a life changer. It's easy to add while I'm in the kitchen cooking.
Yeah.
Now I don't have the blank mind when I'm trying to think of what I need before I go to the store. Hooray.
This happens every week. Penny will look at me and go, do you need something from the store? I'm going to the grocery store today.
Nope.
And I'll just look at her with deer in the headlights.
Can't think of a single thing.
Nope. Don't know what you think. I have no clue. And then, you know, coffee. I must need coffee. it's like a complete waste to ask me the question because I can never come up with anything. So it's perfect that while you're in the middle of cooking, that's when you know you've lost something and you know that you... I could really use some more saran wrap. Oh, look, I'm almost out of aluminum foil. Like you can make that list as you go and how much easier. Yep. I'm so glad. That's exciting. I love it when I help people make things better. That's awesome.
You know, for years,
happy today.
For years, I said that I wanted to have a smart house where I just have to say, hey, house, next time I go to the grocery store, be sure to get such and such. And of course, now they kind of have that in the form of Siri and Alexa and who else is the shopping list. Who else is it that, because Alexa's Amazon, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Google has one too, right?
Yeah, I don't remember.
Isn't there a Google device? I forget.
Probably.
But now that those things are available, I don't really want my house to be that smart, you know? I don't want it to be telling everyone else what I need on my grocery list.
Right.
So.
But I bet you keep an app or something where you take notes, right?
I do. I actually use the Notes app.
Oh, the Notes feature on the phone.
The Notes app on the iPhone. iPhone and the Mac desktop both. They sync between your multiple devices and you can make checklists that are really nice as grocery lists.
You can share them
with other iPhone users.
Oh, I see. Handy. Somebody says they have a whiteboard in the kitchen. Petra says she has a whiteboard in the kitchen. I'm guessing to make notes on. That's excellent.
Yeah. And she says my husband takes a picture when he goes grocery shopping.
Terrific. Oh, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. Then you just take a picture and you move on. Awesome.
Okay.
Good job.
I think it's time to get to the main topic.
Okay. We're ready.
Bill Cunningham, legendary fashion photographer for the New York Times, said that fashion is the armor to survive the reality of everyday life. That's where our title came from today.
Right.
The rise of fast fashion, the ease of online shopping, and the popularity of retail therapy have left many of us with closets and dressers stuffed to overflowing, sometimes with armor that we've never even gotten around to wearing. Today, we're going to talk about fresh ways to think about your personal style and wardrobe and alternative strategies to make your wardrobe manageable and fabulous.
This topic is a direct result of a comment Deborah from Canada by way of Vienna made in August 2020 about her clothing manifesto. She got us thinking about alternative ways to envision how we fill our closets, how we get dressed every day, and what a radical shift in that thinking might do. Here's what she originally said. I was doing a seasonal sort out and looked sharply at all the keepers and identified the factors of the keepers: color, length, placement of darts, which was a very smart one, I thought, sleeve length, fabric, neckline, etc. Now I only purchase clothes which meet my manifesto. So she decided to mine the keepers in her wardrobe to identify what those keepers had in common and set those parameters as a style guideline. Why buy all the latest trends when those trends might have nothing to do with what makes you feel good or what makes you look good with your body shape? It's a great idea. And we found some good examples of ways to filter the wardrobe to share with you. The first alternative closet idea is one I'm sure you've all heard of by now, the term capsule wardrobe. And here's how it works. In the word of Catherine Rector of unfancy.com, un-fancy.com. A capsule wardrobe is a mini wardrobe made up of really versatile pieces that you totally love to wear. So each season you clear your closet except for a set number of pieces to be in your capsule wardrobe. And Catherine Rector's golden number is 37 items, but it varies by season. Your capsule collection is made up of a combination of items that you already own and love to wear, as well as new quality items that you can shop for once a season. So think about that for a minute. A max of 37 items for one season. Imagine how empty your closet would be with just 37 things in there. Then at the beginning of the next season, you buy some new things and give away the old season's things, still keeping only 37 things. It's a radically different way of filling the closet. Instead of keeping everything you've ever bought or everything you ever tried, you keep the things you love to wear right now with seasonal extras for a maximum of 37 things. Every few months, you update the capsule. So it's not like you stop shopping. You just shop and turn over your wardrobe 4 times a year. It's a really radical idea. Another alternative clothing idea is the work uniform. I actually love this one because I have a uniform I wear every day. I have about 8 scrubs tops from, you know, scrub uniform, and a couple pairs of jean shorts I wear every day that I work when I work with a client. It makes it super fast and easy to get dressed for work every day. I used to wear professional clothes in an office, but what a nightmare to decide what to wear every day. This concept is made famous for women, particularly by Matilda Call, who is an artistic director, who is having some very bad mornings deciding what to wear every day to work. She decided to create her own work uniform of a white silk blouse, and it was a particular short sleeve style with a placket that was sideways. It was a unique white silk blouse and black pants. And she bought 15 of the exact same shirt and a few pairs of black trousers, and she was done. When it's cold season, she added a blazer. So now she wastes no time getting dressed every day and spends no mental energy worrying about it either. Imagine your closet with 15 of one shirt and 3 pairs of pants and no other work clothes. What a revolution that would be in your closet. These new angles on wardrobe parameters are attempts to make your closets less stressful in every possible way. If you could adopt one of these ideas in your closet, think of the benefits. You would free up all kinds of closet space, shelf space, drawer space. You reduce your budget for new clothing, I'm sure. You can set your lightly used hand-me-downs free to serve other people's needs. You reduce the time you spend thinking about and choosing what to wear. Oh my God, I had some horrible mornings panicking. I put this on. No, I'm not going to wear that. I put this one on. No, I'm not going to wear that. You've all had that moment and you had a bad morning and you tried 47 outfits on before you could leave. What if that never happened again? How wonderful would that be? You're going to reduce the stress of wardrobe decision-making. It doesn't seem like much, but day after day style choices take a toll. They count against your daily capacity for decision-making. You shouldn't have to begin every day by running up a balance on your decision fatigue account or being late again because you couldn't decide what to wear. You will definitely reduce maintenance overhead, the time that you spend taking things to dry cleaning, hassle and cost of that, special care laundry requirements, special storage requirements. Those can all be reduced by a different, smaller, focused wardrobe. That just sounds like a lot of freed up mental energy and stress reduction to me. So what advice can I give you to head in this direction? Let me pose a few tactics to help you thin the closet, even if you don't want to do something more radical like the capsule wardrobe or adopting a work uniform. These are clothing parameters that you can use to filter your closet, just like Deborah suggested doing. First off, this is the one that's going to make everybody cry. You want to keep only what fits, no exceptions, no backup wardrobe for smaller sizes of you. Keep only what fits. That will take a huge amount of volume out of your closet right there.
Can't we allow an exception if someone is on a successful weight loss regimen and has a reasonable expectation that they'll be to the next size? Can we make exception
there? If you're in the middle of that, yes. If you're in the middle of that and you are stepping your way down to something, then yes, I would do that. Maybe it's just that you get to your goal weight and then you do this purge of the closet after you're done. And you can be letting go of larger things all the way if you want, all along the process. As you step down, you can then say, okay, I've shrunk below these clothes and I need to let them go. Eliminate items that don't fit your current style. A participant in a previous webcast about clothing suggested this approach. Ask yourself, would I buy this piece of clothing again today? If the answer is no, then you can just acknowledge that you've moved on to a new look and let this item go. Like Deborah suggested, analyze those pieces that truly make you happy to wear them and use them as a guide about what to keep and what to buy in the future. You're essentially making your own style look regardless of what's on trend. We've talked a lot about style, but let's also discuss lifestyle. Maybe you're holding on to clothes that you used to enjoy wearing to nightclubs, but you don't go out to clubs anymore. Or you used to attend lots of formal events, but now that's not how you enjoy spending your time. Or you used to wear professional clothes to the office, but now you're retired. It doesn't matter how much money you spent or how great you still look in these clothes. If you don't have the occasion to wear them and you don't expect to anytime soon, they're just taking up valuable rack space. If you think you might have the occasion to wear one piece someday, keep the best option of all of them and let the rest go. Do you still have clothes for a sport or an outdoor activity that you no longer enjoy or have lost the mobility for? Be realistic about the likelihood that you'd participate in that activity again and set those clothes free. I don't know about you, but I would not be needing a wardrobe of camping clothing to keep me warm while I sleep in a tent. So I would not save anything in that environment, for instance. Emphasize quality over quantity. One lovingly handmade or tailored item may cost 10 times as much as its fast fashion counterpart, but it's more likely to last longer and long enough to justify the expense. And the care and the artistry that went into creating it will enhance your enjoyment of it. And why not buy quality items if you're building this season's capsule wardrobe? Quality always looks better on anyway. Eliminate items you're keeping for sentimental reasons. Clothing should be functional. Clothing as keepsake takes up a lot of room in the closet. And particularly if you've inherited several closets full of relatives' clothing, this is a project that needs doing and facing up to doing. It's time to take photos and send those clothes on to the next person so that your closet space serves your needs and doesn't function solely as the storage container for keepsakes. Are you retired, but you're still holding on to a wardrobe sufficient for 40 hours a week of work and looking professional? It's okay to trim your collection down to a level more appropriate to the occasional luncheon, volunteer meeting, or happy hour that you plan to attend. That full-time job required a lot of clothing, but you're going to wear that type of clothing about 10% of the time you used to wear it. Clearing that portion of your clothes to 10% of what it once was is part of changing your life to the new retired version of you. That's our suggestions about wardrobes this week. So what have you all been thinking as you've been listening today?
Joy, who's with us on Facebook, said, I just decluttered my clothes again this weekend after a friend inspired me by showing me the trunk of her car, which was filled with donations she was taking to a thrift store.
Ooh.
My company has decided to extend our remote work option for another year. So I'm donating most of my work clothes, as most of them will be outdated by the time I return to the office.
Go back to work. That's very good. That's awesome. Yeah.
Tammy asked, why 37 on the capsule wardrobe? Did you in your reading get any feel for whether that was an arbitrary number or was it more of a, I need 5 of these, 10 of these, 2 of these, and, you know.
They didn't describe it in the article that we were looking at about why that particular number. There's another version of it called from another person called Project 333, which is 33 items that you wear for 3 months straight without wearing anything else. And I think it's just a sort of a, it's a general number that covers, it doesn't include sleepwear or underwear. Your underwear and bras don't count, but it's basically I remember reading vaguely before and when this topic originally came up that they were trying to balance, okay, this many tops and this many pants and you have a few dresses. And like, so they sort of came up with if you have 37 pieces that you can cover everything that you need for a particular time, for a particular season and be fine. And I think there's nothing specifically locked in about it. Like one is 33 and one is 37, but I think this is a sufficient quantity of clothing that you can have varieties to meet all your needs and still be fine. Yeah. And I had when I was much younger, I was working in an office and the administrative secretary to the president wore the same outfit she would buy every season when the new season's clothes would come out at the fancy stores. She would go and buy 5 work outfits and she would wear those 5 outfits for 3 months. And then those would disappear and you would never see them again. And she would go buy 5 new outfits for the new season. And so she rotated her work clothes 5 outfits at a time. So it was fascinating to me that she did that. And she would get good wear out of them because she would wear those 5 things for, each piece would get worn every week for 12 weeks, which means that she would wear everything 12 times. And then she would retire it and the new round of clothing would come. So she got to shop. She got to spend a set amount of money on her wardrobe every year. And it was a great way for her to have a refreshed wardrobe on a secretary salary, right? That she could buy nice things, but she was only buying 5. And so she was able to do it on her income level, which I thought was really brilliant of her. And it's this idea that you have your 37 things that you wear for 12 weeks, and then you give away some of the seasonal stuff. You keep your jeans, you keep your favorite black pants, you keep your favorite white blouse, and you blend in some new things for the new season that's coming up. And so I think it's just a way to recognize how little you actually have to cover your clothing needs, as opposed to the closets that we have that have thousands of items in them and that never get worn. We just basically create a store in our closet and then it never comes out again. Or most of it doesn't, right?
I was thinking 37 items, if you have a walk-in closet, it might feel like a ridiculous waste of space. But I guess what we're talking about here is a lot of people have a lot less than a walk-in closet to live with. And your number, if you have a huge walk-in closet, your number could be any number you want it to be, as long as it fits easily. So you don't ever have to stuff something in. You don't ever have to dig to try and find the thing you're looking for.
And you're wearing everything that's in there.
And you're wearing that's everything. The point. Yeah. Connie said, but I need to keep 2 seasons worth because of weather changing during transition from one season to another.
But you probably don't have to keep, if you were going to do a capsule wardrobe, you wouldn't have to keep 2 sets of 37, because some of the things like your favorite pair of jeans or your favorite black pants that you wear all the time, those are going to roll from season to season, no matter what. Your tennis shoes that you like to wear, your coat that you always wear, that's going to roll from season to season with you. And so you can have the basics that are you're going to keep no matter what, that are your favorites. And then you're going to have a seasonal, 15 or 20 pieces of this season and 15 or 20 pieces of that season. That's okay. You can do that. The idea is just to recognize that you don't need the full closet of clothing that you actually keep. And we're sort of used to it. And we keep making bigger and bigger closets to accommodate. But all we're really doing is moving we're moving a clothing store into our house. And then you die and somebody has to move that clothing store out. So you might as well start that process yourself and get more refreshed use of your clothes. And if this idea doesn't resonate with you, great. And you can think about another way that you can manage your closet that does resonate for you better. But I think we're just trying to provide some alternate solutions to see your closet and your clothes, your wardrobe in a radically new way to help you release, create space, find less stress, and make use of get to wear what you have and not keep a bunch that you don't wear.
Yeah. Anya said, for the past few years, I have worked on my wardrobe. I invested quite a lot of money and consulted a costume designer about color and style for me twice. And now I have my personal toolbox because I know exactly what colors enhance my natural colors. And I also experience what neckline, sleeves, and skirt lengths look just great on me. That has helped me skip all fashionable stuff. It's a sort of timeless and quite fashion trend independent style. And I buy less and have more to wear anytime. And because all colors go together wonderfully, I can mix and match a lot. Anyway, it's so much fun because I enjoy playing with colors and shapes. I love it and it was worth all the expense, but I have to admit that it's quite hard to find a really good consultant and stylist.
Well, and that's like the, you know, that's like the souped up version of what Deborah did. Deborah right. did it without consultant advice, but how great that you went the extra step to get somebody to help you make good choices about your coloring and your body shape and your style. How great. What a great idea. Nice of you to be able to do the process and then get happy with everything that you have. And that's the ultimate goal. Like we try a lot of clothes and they don't all look great. And we shouldn't keep them just because we spent money on them if we don't look great in them, because then we're never going to wear them. Or we put them on because we spent money on them and then we go out in them and feel weird and uncomfortable while we're wearing them. And that doesn't do anybody's confidence good, right? Like that just makes you feel, you know, like you're stepping wrong as soon as you step out of the house. And so it's a good thing that you did, that you went and got somebody to support you in that. That's awesome. Congrats.
Catherine said, I changed my work uniform by adding seasonal pins. And Deborah said, I change up. This is Deborah who started this whole conversation.
Right.
Says, I change up bracelets, rings, necklace, and scarves. I often wear the same earrings for 3 to 4 months.
Right. Well, and having the, you know, a scarf is a splash of color and pattern that you can put on something on top of something that is sort of a standard uniform look anyway. Lots of people do that. Now in Houston, scarves are like, I couldn't do that in my regular life for 8 months out of the year, a scarf around my neck would feel like I was melting.
Yes.
So, you know, it doesn't work in some parts of the country, but a scarf is a great accessory of color and style that is easy and flexible and can be shifted to provide you a little interest on top of something that is, that you're wearing basic and repetitive every day. And you know what? Jewelry is always a great accessory to something that is standard.
And Joyce said, that's great, Anya, commenting on Anya's comment.
Right.
I did something similar in my 20s when Color Me Beautiful was a thing in the U.S. My best colors are nearly all ones that even as a child, I knew looked best on me.
Mm-hmm. There is, you know, everybody's skin color is different. It's all some shade of, you know, super pasty white to really, really dark. And not all colors go with all skin tones. Like if I put yellow on, I look like I'm super ill. So it may look fabulous in yellow, but if I put it on, I'm going to look like I have jaundice. So there's no point in me buying something in that color. So everybody has those colors that make them look creepy and those colors that make them look fabulous. And so figuring out what those colors are, it is worth the effort, and then shop in those colors and skip the rest of them and go, isn't it great that your skin tone is a lovely brown and you can wear that bright yellow and it looks fabulous? Cause I can't do that. That's just the deal, right? We all have colors that work. We are a walking color palette, and we all have colors on the color wheel that work for us and ones that don't.
Ellen said, I finally figured out that I needed to purge / avoid buying anything with a wide or scoop neckline or annoying sleeves. I now have 8 pairs of black slacks, and approximately 1/3 of my shirts are the same style in different colors. I also decided what colors I do and don't like on me and avoid all others, no matter how cute.
There you go. See?
Cute in quotation marks.
And that keeps all those clothes that are so cute but don't work out of your closet. That's awesome. That's exactly what you're going for. That's exactly what you're going for. I'm proud of you guys.
And Jana said, I don't grasp the idea of clothing being outdated with this exception. I no longer have, nor would I wear, the extreme bell-bottom slacks and midriff tops I wore in the 70s. Other than that, I could not use this concept as a way to reduce my clothing.
So clothing is more of entertainment for you, and you're more willing to wear a wider variety. So then I would focus on quality over quantity. You like all kinds of styles, but maybe you need to, like, if you have some things that you still had in the 70s or the 80s, some of those fabrics are probably not great. Some of that elastic is dead. Some of the, you know, no fabric. Well, let me restate. Not all fabrics last forever. There are a few that will survive for longer than others, but it's important to be checking all the time. The older the piece gets, the more likely it is that the clothing is deteriorating in some way, and you should be able to filter for that at least. And then you can also, if you like a broader variety of styles, then, you know, maybe you keep a representative sample of a few styles that you like and not keep everything that you have is a way to reduce it.
Linda, who's with us on Facebook, said, I did Color Me Beautiful 30 years ago. The colors that look good haven't changed, but the style and functionality, comfy, has. I try to review my wardrobe needs on a seasonal basis.
Right.
That's a determining factor for a lot of people. Like, even though I can still get 501 jeans that fit me, that was a style that worked for me in my 30s and just doesn't anymore. They're not comfortable.
Right.
They
exactly.
fit in a certain way that, you know, it's probably that, you know, when I was wearing 501 jeans, I wasn't spending that much time sitting. I was more active. I was, you know, back and forth and, you know, out and about in them.
Right.
And now my forms of entertainment tend to include more sitting, campfires, and relaxing on the deck and that kind of
thing. And sitting in the chair watching video.
Yeah.
We all have shifts in our body shape over time. Exactly. And, you know, the styles that worked back then don't work anymore. And recognizing what styles work for you now is great. And having a look that says, oh, this is Gail to whoever sees you. You should have your own look. This is the kind of stuff that I like. This is the kind of stuff that I wear. And if you are a fashionista and you want a whole bunch of clothing, then I would concentrate on keeping the variety of clothing, but keeping the quality pieces and not the quantity. Aim for really good examples of all the kinds of clothes that you like. And not keep the huge volume, keep the really high quality stuff. And then you'll be wearing really fabulous things that are all over the spectrum, but the closet won't be as stuffed if you just keep every possible thing you can get your hands on. Just a thought. If you can't absorb the shift in thinking, that's okay. You can do something else.
On the matter of the daily stress, Randy says deciding and pulling out next day clothes helps.
Oh yeah. Doing it the night before.
Yeah.
I think that's particularly good for people who are ADD or people who are not morning people.
Super not morning people.
When you don't have a lot, when your brain hasn't kicked into gear in the morning, it's hard to get some, you know, rapid decision-making going if you're not quite like me, if you're not quite awake yet. So that's exactly right. Doing it when you have the most bandwidth to focus on it is a great idea. And then you can sort of, you don't feel as pressured against the time, although you're giving up sleep time if you take a long time doing it, but it's a little bit less pressure if you're trying to do it before you go to bed than when you, after you wake up. And so, yeah, take that time, do it the night before, make your choices, and then you can just get up and put on.
Stacy from Atlanta said, costumes and repairs, struggling with these ideas. So I guess that's, I'm not sure about costumes, but I guess the question about repairs is,
do you, how many things do I say because they need repairs? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess this is really a function of A, do you like sewing or doing those kinds of repairs? If you like them, you're more likely to do them. If you don't like to do it, then I will tell you, every house that I've been in, I have found some stack of mending that has been there so long that the people that those things were being mending for have now aged 30 years and would in no way be able to put on the pants that need that hemming anymore. So you don't want to create a backlog of chore that you will never actually do. So the alternative is you find a little repair place for some kind of a dry cleaner that has a mending person on site, somebody that's doing alterations, that you go and spend the money and pay someone else to do it, which means that it's become a to-do item that you run things to there and have them dropped off and then go pick them up later, which is a shorter, faster way than you doing it if you hate mending it. But then you have to ask yourself, is this repair worth the price and my time to take it and drop it off to be mended? And so this is all a time valuation process. Why should I mend this pair of pants if I don't absolutely love them? Why not just donate and let somebody else do that mending, right? So you really have to evaluate whether you like doing the mending yourself. If you do, then you're more likely to get to it. And then it becomes a chore that you have to put on your to-do list. If you don't like to do the sewing, or you don't feel competent enough to do the sewing, so that you would then, like, I wouldn't trust myself to hem a pair of jeans, for instance. Not, I could probably do it, but I would do a tacky job. It wouldn't be a skillful job. And then I would be wearing a pair of pants that looked like the hem was done by a three-year-old, and that would not be appropriate. So recognizing whether or not you have the skill set to do it in a way that you would then be comfortable to wear it again after you did the repair, and whether you like it or not. And if you don't, and then the next step is, okay, now I got to find a location to let somebody else do this mending for me. And the question is it worth it? And if it isn't worth your time and money to do that, then you should probably send it on and let somebody else find it and repair it.
We should probably mention Dress for Success. That hasn't come up in this discussion so far, but Susan says, I always donate professional clothes, shoes, and purses to an organization called Dress for Success that helps women get jobs. Other clothes can be given away on a local Facebook Buy Nothing group.
Exactly. And Dress for Success has very limited parameters. They take all kinds of stuff, but they donate away probably 85%. I'm making up that number, but they donate away to other charities because they want very specific professional suit wear, professional dress shirts, the jewelry. They give all the people that are getting their basically job interview outfits, they give them specific jewelry they buy and provide specific jewelry. So they don't just randomly give somebody a pair of earrings or jewelry that you've donated. There is a secondary room that they have here in Houston anyway, of other professional wear. But in order to get to those clothes, they have to get a job and go through a certain amount of training to earn access to the secondary room of clothing. And so even so, they're super picky about what they want to provide someone who's going for a job interview. And so the parameters are super narrow. it means that you end up donating a lot of clothing and not all of it makes it into their room. So just know that. And yeah. You can go on the website and they're very clear about what kinds of stuff that they want and how they want to receive it and what they're going to do with it if they don't think it passes muster.
Okay, we are running out of time and the chat has been really wonderful today. Just a couple more that I want to share. Charity said, my mom taught me to never buy anything I don't look great in and don't feel comfortable in. She said, this is the secret to being seen as a beautiful woman.
Oh, it's true. If you don't feel comfortable, you're just like, you walk around cringing and it's so obvious to everyone you're uncomfortable.
This has saved me lots of money and I do feel better in my clothes. And then there was one I wanted to share from Jane who said, when I put something on and it's not comfortable or flattering and decide to take it off, it immediately goes into the donation area. Before getting motivated to declutter, it would have gone back on a hanger and into the closet. If it doesn't look or feel good now, there's no reason to believe that will change.
Right? Like it's, if you put it on today and go, ew, I would, ugh, and you cringe, you're going to be cringing tomorrow too. So you might as well just recognize that the cringe is the sign that you will never wear it and it needs to go straight into donation. That's 100% right.
And then I'm going to let Deborah have the last word too. Since she started this thing off. I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's a long one, but Deborah says, I recommend always having a funeral outfit available. We have lots of warning when we have to go to a wedding or a baby shower and therefore lots of time to shop for an outfit, but next to no warning for funeral outfits.
It's true. Having your standard black dress or, you know, pants and blazer that you're willing to wear for a funeral is a great, you got to have it. And it's, you know, it's not something you have to worry about in your 20s. You don't think about having to have a funeral outfit, but as we get older, you know that funerals become part of the transitions and experiences of life. And you need to be prepared to go and do that. It's 100% true. Okay, so this weekly tittle is called Take a Fresh Look. And this week's assignment is to evaluate your wardrobe with an eye towards simplifying your day-to-day choices and freeing up space. So select as your focus a space where you store clothing for current use, like a closet, a shelf, or a dresser, or a single clothing storage bin or box. Identify an item that no longer fits, try it on to make sure, but unless you're confident that it's going to fit again very soon, toss it in the donation bag. Identify an item that no longer suits your style. Take a moment to appreciate how you once felt about it, and then let it go to donation again. Identify an item that you don't wear, but you keep for sentimental reasons. Take a photograph to remember the item by, and then give it to someone who will wear it or add it to donation so somebody can wear it now. And here's your bonus task based on what Deborah did. Pick out 3 or 4 of your most favorite items and jot down a list of what these pieces have in common or what you love about them, and keep that list to guide your future fashion shopping. So you can sort of do what Deborah did and examine the styles, the parameters, the factors about the clothing that you wear most often and feel the greatest in. What is it about them that you love? Why do they work? Why are they perfect for you? And then keep that list and keep that available when you go shopping and start trying stuff on. And if you go, yep, here's another V-neck and V-neck always looks stupid on me. Here's another scoop neck and scoop neck always looks terrible on me. Then you can go, okay, put it back on the rack and move on to something that you like better, right? Those are your assignments for the week. And let's see if you can't start changing the way that you see your wardrobe and see how your stuffed closet looks. And maybe we can get to thin in some of that so you have better access. Good luck. Good luck on it.
Okay. One more. I'm going to give a shout out to Johanna, who is watching from Munich, and it's her first time live. So I wanted to throw that in there before we finish.
Hi, welcome to the Clutterfree Weekly. We're so glad you're here all the way from Munich. Thank you.
We want to say a special thank you this week to Randy and Carrie for becoming our newest Patreon supporters. If you would like to help support our efforts with a recurring monthly donation of any size, please visit cfhou.com/Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Your contributions help us offset the cost of producing the Webley weekly webcast. I was going to try Webley weekcast or something, and will help us fund new projects that we have in the works. Thank you again for your support, Carrie, Randy, and all of our generous underwriters.
Thank you. We appreciate you so much. And it's always a thrill for us to see that somebody has, we get a little email notice that somebody has sent, has joined and signed up to be a patron. And it's very exciting for us. So thank you for doing that.
I want to remind everyone that we'll be back next week live on Tuesday, November 16th at noon US Central Time in Zoom and streaming on Facebook. We're going to talk about, this is another one inspired by a viewer comment about creating a vision for your home. We're calling this episode Form, Function, and Feeling, Creating a Vision for Your Tidy Home. So this is going to be a little bit about goal setting, a little bit about assessing what values you want to display in your home, what kind of lifestyle you want to live in your home, and how all these things fit together in a vision that will help you be less cluttered.
And reflect what is important to you in your house.
Exactly. If you are watching this on YouTube, we would love for you to join us live. To receive notifications about upcoming events, we invite you to join the meetup group by visiting cfhou.com/meetup. You can also follow us on Facebook by going to cfhou.com/Facebook. Or join our mailing list by visiting cfhou.com/subscribe. We love to hear from you, so please keep those questions, comments, and topic suggestions coming on YouTube, Facebook, or anywhere that you find us. And you can always reach us through our website at clutterfairyhouston.com. We'll see you next week.
All right, we'll see you next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.